This week on Wine Chat, we're going to be looking at the South Italy, the heel of the boot, Puglia, in our tour of Italy. Specifically, we're taking a look at the grape Primitivo and the wines of Manduria and Puglia's most prestigious wine region. To talk about this and more, we're joined each and every week by Cal Lee. Cal, welcome back.
Hi. It's pleasure to be here.
We're looking at Puglia, of course, named after a renowned Australian actor, Anthony LaPaglia. Sorry, Anthony LaPaglia.
Yeah, yeah.
Damn it.
Hey, folks, I'm going to throw you a little behind the scenes. Cam also let me know he was going to make that joke, so this makes it so much better.
Oh, no. I just can't. It's one of those. Yeah. I think it got completely destroyed by the
hoisted by one's own petard, yeah. I believe is the term.
That is the technical term.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Whatever. It's wine
fine.
Chat. Talk
it's
about
fine.
The grapes.
Fine.
Cal,
go.
You know.
Just start. Yeah. Lay the land.
Yeah.
What is Puglia like? What's going on down there?
Yeah. I mean, Puglia is a really interesting region. So the actual Latin derivation for the name Apulia basically comes from not much rain. So it's very dry. It's coastal, obviously. It's the heel of the boot, as was mentioned. And has this really cool geology of being this sort of quite calcareous. And by that, basically, it's decomposed seashells and little sea critters, like limestones, that kind of thing. And then really rich, super iron-heavy soils on top of that. So much so that there's certain parts and vineyards where it's bright red soil that you can sort of see all over the place. Which makes the region pretty fertile.
Yeah.
Lots of sun, nice Mediterranean influence, keeps stuff cold so nothing gets too burnt or anything. And I think the reason, part of the reason I mention all this is because this maps really nicely to a bunch of other sort of what we call New World wine regions. So you sort of think about a lot of the Eastern Australian coastline there, sunny, pretty dry a lot of the time, but is gets quite hot, moderated by the sea influence.
Sure.
You think of California, another great example of that, Parts of it are quite dry, lots of sunshine, moderated by the sea influence, that kind of thing.
And so what kind of wines are they making down there?
Yeah, so after Veneto, which we talked about last week, to scr.com/producer/cal-lee for more of that. But it's a lot of bulk production here, and sort of the complexity around Puglian wine, it comes from sort of the fact that there was a lot of indigenous wine production here, very specifically a lot of stuff that's what we call bush vine. So instead of, you're training a wine on a trellis, and it's what you think of, it's got two arms, it goes up, the grapes hang, and you can pick them really easily. These little bush vines are maybe knee height at most, and they're sort of trained into being quite a tight shrub so that the actual fruit on the inside is really protected from a lot of the harsh sun. And it makes wines, it allows you to get a lot of intensity of flavor into the wine. But it's a lot of labor to do that. And so sort of in the late 80s, early 90s, is sort of part of the EU-ification of a lot of the Italian large-scale wine production. A lot of those vines got pulled out. They got replaced by Chardonnay and Merlot, or more sort of bulk consumption varietals like Trebbiano, which is another white wine. And because of that, it is now the second largest producer of wine in Italy. But there are still pockets of what I would consider more traditional, whatever you need that to mean, winemaking in Puglia. And that's specifically centered around Negro Amaro, you get in a few reasons, and the great Primitivo, which is sort of what I wanted to focus on today. And there's like you said, the Manduria. There's a few little pockets there which are DOC, DOCG, quite strictly protected regions. And it's interesting, it's sort of struggling a little bit because it's not quite to modern commercial tastes in the way in which a lot of their bulk production wine is it's designed for supermarkets, so they can tend to make wines that are, quite alcoholic, there's some of those Amarone versions get up to 18%, they're big boozy things.
Yeah.
But the thing I really like about Primitivo is that it has this real sort of bright, fresh acidity to it, even in these really hot climates. Once again, I'm just going to mention this. Every time we've talked about red wine grapes from Italy, the thing I've mentioned, keeps really good acidity, even in a hot climate.
Yeah.
And this is one of those things I think is when you start looking at tasting blind or doing stuff like that, that's a really good thing to sort of keep in mind, is like when you're looking at these acid profiles, what makes something taste Italian? For me, that's one of those markers that I'm looking for there.
The continued acidity. Yeah.
Yeah.
And sometimes Primitivo is called Zinfandel. Why is that?
So the history of Zinfandel sort of starts in the 1820s, 1830s in New England. So sort of like the North East part of America.
Here it is, the back door into American wine.
Yeah. Let's go.
Bit of inside baseball, folks. Cal explicitly told me that this is actually a back doorway to talk about American winemaking. So here we go.
As the colony of Americans moved to the West to follow the California Gold Rush, they bring with them grapes, much like the Romans did when they sort of colonized a lot of Europe. And so you sort of, all of a sudden, the West Coast of America during this sort of like peak Gold Rush era of like 1860s to 1880s, a lot of this Zinfandel starts getting planted out and starts becoming, it crops really well, like it produces a good amount of fruit, loves the sunshine, doesn't really seem to need much water. And they're like, great, kind of weird for a variety from Austro-Hungary, because they typically sort of like it a bit colder, but like, awesome. And it starts to pick up quite a lot of momentum, and you sort of start to hear people talking about it as being like, you know, the Bordeaux equivalent that America is making. And it makes some wines that are quite highly regarded. And sort of fast forward to like the mid-80s, and Zinfandel is sort of the main grape of California. It's sort of what they're known for. And it's sort of history is sort of lost to obscurity. And then UC Davis starts to do some genetic testing there. Mm-hmm. And they figure out that Zinfandel is actually the grape Primitivo, which is weird because they can't find any connection of cuttings from Puglia going to the United States at all. So they're like, okay, let's pull this back one step further. How does Primitivo get to Puglia? And what happens is they actually trace it back to a handful of really small villages in Croatia, where basically this was like a random crossing from indigenous Croatian varietals that got split off and sort of slowly bounced its way around the coastline until it made it over to Puglia there. But also Croatia, especially when you're talking 1800s, like, you know, HRE, all that stuff there, that grape also made its way north into Austro-Hungary, which is how it then got shipped to New England.
It's basically twins almost, like, separated
by
a couple
of
centuries.
Just because the sort of ampelography of that process is really hard to keep track of when it's like... keeping records of this thing is really, really hard, especially when you can't double-check the work at any point. So just that link just got lost in that whole milieu there. And then they sort of got recombined. And now the funny thing is, because Zinfandel is so much more of an internationally recognized grape varietal than Primitivo is, the Italians are now starting to label it as Zinfandel when they export it over to the United States. So, you know, I find that fascinating.
That's an interesting historical tidbit. I like that. We might have to have more of a chat about wine history, specifically. That'd be interesting.
I think we'll do a California episode and talk about the issues in. I think that's worth doing.
And, looking locally, anyone in Australia making Primitivo or Zinfandel?
Well, and that's, of course, that's the thing, right? You get people making Primitivo and you get people making Zinfandel. And typically producers tend to make them in the styles that are more relevant to their homes. You know, like the Primitivos tend to be made in that more sort of rustic Italian style, big bright acid, you know, quite crunchy fruits. And then you see people who are making Zinfandel, like Zinfandel Rosé, for example, you see is often... let's call it a touch sweet. maybe lolly water is what gets thrown around a bit. But, you know, but people are making them as sort of that more like Bordeaux-esque kind of style of wine. And I think there's, you know, once again, same like Italian heritage regions sort of produced there. Zinfandel, I don't think, has ever been considered particularly cool in Australia. But there's definitely been people sort of trying it out as a style just because of how commercially successful it is in the United States. And that always being a really appealing wine market for the Australian export community.
Yeah. And what are you drinking this week?
I'm going to shock you. I'm drinking a Primitivo.
Get out of here.
I know. It's, how does he keep getting away with this? No, shout outs to...
It's like every week you're drinking the wine that you're talking about. It's incredible. Except for last week when you weren't at all.
Yeah. Well, I was drinking, but the Semillon I tried the day before was so good I had to shout it out. Shout outs to Peter.
Shout out to Peter.
But no, this is from Bink Wines. It's their little Primitivo. Coco, who also makes Yeti and the Coconut wines.
Yep.
Really cool natural winemaker. I think in the last 3 years, his wines have gone from good to stunning. And I think this is a really great example of that. Still shows some like really classic sort of rustic Italian notes to it, but with like a little bit more of an Australian twist on it. I'll sort of put up some more details on it in the notes, but it's a really, really fun wine, that.
Not unlike wine in a cask, it has matured.
Exactly.
And with that...
with that sombering
thought. Sobering thought. Well, not really. Not when it comes to wine. Yeah, there's no sober thought when it comes to wine.
Unfortunately not.
There it is. Where are we heading next week? Are we continuing our...
Yeah, we're going to go to Sicily. Like, I think...
We're heading further south.
Yeah, I think if we're going to do it, we've got to do it, you know?
Do it. We're in the area.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll cross over.
Just going to... Yeah, you know.
The chunk that the boot is kicking.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Gotta go from heel to toe.
Yeah, I'm sure this is
over the toe.
Appreciate that.
And
what in Sicily are we looking at?
We'll be looking at a whole bunch of different wines. They've got their own entirely distinct winemaking history there. But we'll sort of be talking about the wines of Etna and the Nerello Mascalese and Nerello Capuccio and stuff like that. But also just how influential I find Sicily is on the current sort of wave of Italian influence, Australian winemaking. I think Sicily is maybe the keystone in a lot of that style.
Cool. All right. Well, catch you next week for that one.
Fantastic. See you then.
Thank you for joining me for another week of Wine Chat.
It's an absolute pleasure.